Ciao, 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 Bellas and Art Nerds. This is Juliette Sarah, your Renaissance Queen, and this is Renaissance Rebel.
Per farlo il rap non è morto soltanto, non è pubblico adatto se stanno immersi col collo in un campo di merda, la testa che sbatte su muri di trap.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Renaissance Rebels, a podcast for Italian Renaissance art nerds. I hope all of you are doing well and staying healthy during this trying time. Our thoughts are with everyone affected by the coronavirus pandemic. I am your host, Juliette, and later I'll be joined by a special guest who's going to give us insight into Renaissance beauty standards. Today, we're going to get back to discussing the hidden gems of Italian Renaissance paintings. That's right, if you've been sitting at home binge-watching Netflix detective shows, get ready to put your learned skills to the test. Since the coronavirus brought this crazy wave of shock over us, I'm going to stick with the theme of surprise and show you guys one of the craziest paintings from the Renaissance, which sits at the Uffizi Art Gallery in Florence. We'll be discussing Piero della Francesca's portrait of the Duke and Duchess of Urbino, painted in 1472. As an art history student with a focus in the Italian Renaissance, I spent a ton of time studying this painting. Upon first glance at the portrait, one could hardly tell that the painting tells the story of a dead wife and a crazy military general who believed self-mutilation would fulfill his military destiny. That's right, it's a wild painting. That's why the painting is so admired, because it's so incredibly deceiving to the eye. I think that's definitely why I love it. Let's take a closer look at the double portrait, also known in the Italian Renaissance as a diptych. Federico de Montefeltro, the Duke of Urbino, married his second wife, Battista Sforza, the Duchess of the Milanese Sforza dynasty, on February 8, 1460. But unfortunately, Battista Sforza died after having given birth to her second child with Montefeltro, a son called Camerino, at just 25 years old in July of 1472. Federico commissioned Piero della Francesca to paint the following portrait to commemorate her life. Art historians believe that Piero della Francesca painted Battista Sforza's portrait from a real death mask, in likeness of a person's face after their death, usually by taking a cast or an impression from the corpse, so we can also assume that this is exactly what Battista Sforza looked like when she died. We can also assume that Piero della Francesca painted Sforza with the same color her corpse possessed, which is why she's so much lighter than her husband. Let's talk about her beauty routine. You might think that's a weird thing to talk about, considering that her hairstyle is probably the ugliest thing I've seen since I last looked at my middle school uniform, but they say no pain, no gain, or beauty is gain. But when does it become too much? The Sforza Duchess has removed her eyebrows and plucked her hairline back towards the center of her scalp to achieve a beautiful high forehead admired at this time. Look, today people get plastic surgery and lip injections to look like a Kardashian because they think that's beautiful. But in the Renaissance, beauty conventions were definitely different, and might I even say equally as horrifying? One thing, though, that has remained certain since the Renaissance is that gentlemen prefer blondes. No, but really, how and why did Italian women of the Renaissance dye their hair blonde? Early Italian Renaissance poet and humanist Francesco Petrarch, born in 1304, would write poems of his beloved Laura over a period of about 20 years and dedicated countless books and love poems to her. In poem 197, Petrarch writes, "Her blonde hair and the noose of curls that binds the soul, armed with humility, not weapons, so gently and so tightly." Almost every poem of Petrarch's was a fetishization of Laura's blonde hair. It was really, really weird. Women naturally desired to adhere to the beauty ideals of the time, so blonde it was. We're going to hear from Karen Smith, a hairstylist and Wellham master color expert in West Hollywood, California, on how women of the Italian Renaissance used horse urine to lighten their hair to a Laura blonde. Hi, good evening.
Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for coming to talk to us during this difficult time. How are you staying strong during this quarantine?
It's a trying time, but we're all in it together, and just taking each day as it comes, because
exactly.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so thank you for coming to talk to us. So can you tell me the process of how Italian women in the Renaissance lightened their hair?
They would use horse urine, walnut shells, tree bark, alum, apples, vinegar, honey. I think they would take it all together, mash it up. Sometimes they would boil the apples.
And then they would apply it to the hair.
They would apply it to the hair with a comb, a brush.
So quite similar to the way that you apply bleach and other lightening materials to hair today?
Yes, it's just evolved a lot. The process has evolved a lot, but it's still the same idea. And I suppose we've taken our ideas from them from many years ago.
Yeah. So today, of course, we have hair dryers. And I'm not sure what it's called, a bonnet, whether you sit under the hair dryer.
A hood dryer.
A hood dryer, right, when you have color in your hair. But what would they use back then to develop their color? They would use the sun. So how long would it take them? Because today I believe it takes about 45 minutes for me to do my color. But how long would it take them in the Renaissance?
Well, because it's a very organic way to do it, I think it would take, it depends how light they wanted the hair, but I think it would take weeks to get it that light. I have read through research that they've taken up to 5 days to sit in the sun.
Wow, that's crazy.
I know.
This might be a really weird question, but have you ever heard of anyone doing anything similar to this today, or is just the idea of bleaching similar enough?
I think it's just the idea. I think there are some very natural ingredients, but it's definitely not the same. It's evolved.
So you mentioned that the women of the Renaissance used horse urine, but do you know why they may have specifically used a horse?
I believe that the pH of the urine in a horse is higher level than any other. And I think the urine...
Any other animal?
Could be a cow, human. But I think the pH level is higher in a horse.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, so the chemical reaction with the sun, the heat...
Right.
Would lighten the hair. Yeah.
Wow. Daenerys Targaryen.
Marilyn Monroe.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for coming to talk to us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Hey, Renaissance Rebels. We're back for part two. We're going to get back to talking about the Duke and Duchess, the significance of their double portrait, and all of its hidden symbolism and historical significance. We're also going to be talking about the artist behind the portrait, Piero della Francesca, the Florentinian early Italian Renaissance master of portraiture, mathematics, and humanism. The portrait of the couple also has a high sense of formality, disguised by their stark geometric profile, which renders ancient Roman coinage, which, by the way, the humanists of Montefeltro's court and other humanist courts at the time in Italy were actively collecting. Both figures also tower over the serene, Netherlandish-inspired landscape and give them a symbolic sense of power over the land. The man of the house, Federico de Montefeltro, was a condottieri, an Italian captain contracted to command mercenary companies during the early modern period. So basically, the Pope or European monarchs would hire him to lead his elite army into battle for them. Looking for an army for hire? Call the Duke of Montefeltro. He won't disappoint. Artist Piero della Francesca was not afraid to challenge tradition to adhere to his client's needs. But did the Duke lose the bridge of his nose in the jousting tournament? No. The Duke subsequently underwent nasal surgery to remove tissue from the bridge of his nose to expand his visual field in an attempt to compensate for the lost eye and reduce some effects of ocular parallax. This man truly believed that cutting out the top of his nose would give him better sight and solidify his place as the best condottieri in all of Italy. Although it is unknown if Montefeltro had better sight after the removal of part of his nose, we do know that it surprisingly did not pose as a future health concern to him. The Renaissance marked a great cultural change and is viewed as a bridge between the medieval and modern ages. Scholars of the Renaissance are known as humanists, a philosophical stance that emphasizes the value and agency of human beings individually and collectively. It was this explosion of free thinking that eventually spread to the artists and architects in the 15th century. The independent city-states of central and northern Italy, such as Florence, provided ideal conditions for the emergence of humanism within their economically successful institutions such as banking and universities. Active members of humanist circles considered themselves to be living in a golden age, superior to anything since the fall of Rome thousands of years earlier, with painting, sculpture, poetry, music, and architecture all awakening to a revival after sleeping for centuries. They called this paragone, which translates as competition, from Italian, where all creative displays of emotions and art, like painting, music, and literature, would compete for the top prize. Last but not least, who was the artist Piero della Francesca? Although you most likely have never heard of him, you may know one of his followers, Michelangelo. Born in Florence in 1416, Piero della Francesca was one of the most admired 15th century Italian painters, known for his cool color palette and geometric compositions, as highlighted here in the double portrait of the Duke and Duchess of Urbino. He was a founding member of the early Italian Renaissance, the rebirth of an ancient, majestic, and powerful empire. Francesca considered himself a mathematical theorist, which can be noted in his art through his definition of his figures' volumes and his usage of accurate perspective. This balance in Renaissance art is called naturalism and derives from northern territories such as the Netherlands. Francesca's double portrait of the Duke and Duchess of Urbino not only proves that Francesca himself studied northern art, but rather proves that other Florentine artists at the time were influenced by other frequent encounters with northern art. Nothing is known about Francesca's early training as a painter, though it is assumed that he was introduced by local masters who had been influenced by Sienese art. Francesca's patrons were among the most powerful men in all of Italy, of course the Duke of Urbino, and Sigismond Malatesta in Rimini, and of course Pope Nicholas V in Rome. Federico de Montefeltro, the man who would always be painted from the side, was the embodiment of Renaissance values. His court came to reflect the virtues of Renaissance in art, intellectualism, justice, governance, and public welfare in Urbino. Urbino became the UNESCO World Heritage Site that it is today solely because of Montefeltro's efforts to turn the town into a Renaissance fairy tale, which it still is to this day. He earned vast amounts of money in his service to the papacy and other city-states, such as Milan and even Florence. He was only 16 years old when he began his career as a condottieri, but he truly made his name in 1441 in his conquest of the Castle of St. Leo. His income between 1451 and his death in 1482 has been estimated to reach over 1.5 million ducats, most of which he is believed to have spent on humanist pursuits at his court for the city of Urbino. His court was so advanced that he made sure they received a copy of Commandino's Latin translation of Euclid's Elements. The architects of his three-story hillside palace in Urbino, known today as the Ducal Palace, were Luciano Lorana and Francesco di Giorgio, and was built as a symbol of his ambition for peace amidst his time as a military leader where he had seen much death and sorrow. The Duke was born as the illegitimate son of the Lord of Urbino, but 2 years later was made legitimate by Pope Martin V. In 1444, Federico's half-brother was assassinated, and while there has of course been speculation that this was the work of Federico, there is no evidence to back this up. However, this did result in his ascension to the role of Duke of Urbino. At one point, the city of Urbino and Montefeltro's family were in debt, and he was surrounded by enemies both within his city and outside of its great walls. As a result, he formed an alliance with Francesco Sforza, his wife, Battista Sforza's uncle, who restored his family's fortune in return for taking his niece's hand in marriage to solidify their family's union. Although this sounds like a shitty arranged marriage, There are actually reports that the couple were happily married and that Montefeltro was devastated by Battista Sforza's death, hence why he commissioned Della Francesca to paint their double portrait so their memories could live on together forever. So guys, I'll leave you with that. That's it for today. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. If you want to know more about the artist Piero Della Francesca himself, click on the link below. Tune in next week to hear about Italian Renaissance paintings that portray the Black Plague and keeping in theme with the coronavirus pandemic. Once again, this is Renaissance Rebels. Good night, guys.
Mezzi per farlo, il rap non è morto soltanto, non è pubblico adatto se stanno immersi col collo in un campo di merda, la testa che sbatte su muri di trap, le facce strafatte, strafatte di ghetto, successo che viene, successo che va, dagli tempo che passa, sta moda come uscita così collassa, dammi il tempo che il fare mi ha...